Excision number 12028, reel 2.
Mr. Hall, reel 2.
Yes, well, I came up behind him and hit him in the radiator. And someone else confirmed that he went down for me. And by then I was looking around for something else, but there was nothing else about at the time, so I came back. But that was the only confirmed one I had from Hendon. And then I had one confirmed at Bristol when I just said that I was, when I was shot down.
The one at Hendon, yes. Where did you shoot it down?
That was just south of Bristol itself, south of the airfield.
No, the first one that you shot down.
The first one?
When you were at Hendon.
At Hendon. That must have been somewhere around Biggin Hillway, something like that, just south of London, I suppose.
Do you know the date?
No, I can't. It was some time before... It must have been about the 10th or 12th of September, I think. Before the 15th, I know. So the 15th is when we had our most losses. We had lost 7 that day, on the 15th.
What do you remember about that day?
Well, it started early. You know, by 10 o'clock, I think, the squadron had been scrambled. And... So while we lost 7, I think only 3 of them were killed. I'm not sure, I think it was 3 that were killed. But Ray Holmes, who I mentioned earlier, he was the one that shot the one down that came down in Buckingham Palace. He actually bailed out. He was shot down himself and bailed out and landed in a dustbin, I think. He came, his parachute wrapped round the chimney pot of this house and he fell off the roof. And finished up in the dustbin in the yard. And Basil Bush, who also was trained with me, he had a cannon shell actually in the windscreen, and got his face was very badly covered with flying glass or perspex. Frisbee, he was killed, Battle Officer Frisbee. Pilot Officer Wendell was killed that day, and Pilot Officer Gersine was killed that day. He was another one that trained with me at Sealand. He was shot down. Those are the 3 I do remember that were killed that day. And Sergeant Smith was shot down, but he... Who was Flight Sergeant Smith, was it? He was shot down as well. But you know, it went on all day long, and I actually tried to get in one when somebody had come back, but he pulled his there's a quick release on the harness. Well, that was missing. It must have been pulled off in such a hurry that they broke the cord. How they did that, and then there must have been something faulty with it. So I couldn't go off. I was wondering, it was probably as well, because to go off on your own would have been rather foolhardy. But, you know, when you see all this happening, you're so mad, you don't temper dash with discretion, as one should, really. But I didn't go off on my own. I had to wait until they all came back, and then we went off again in the afternoon. But that was such a busy day. You know, flying, went on all through the time. I think that was their biggest effort that they put on to try and bomb London into submission, which didn't work, of course.
Why do you think the losses were so heavy that day?
Well, I think it was just that there were more of them about, and we seemed to, you know, get into them more than we had done in the past. Well, the tremendous claims that day, which of course weren't... I think in actual fact there was only about 85 and 90 shot down that day by us, but it's very difficult air fighting. You know, 2 people fire at the same aeroplane and claim it. It isn't that they're claiming something that they just don't realise you know, they think they've got it and the other pilot thinks he has. That's why this camera gun business came in later on, which we didn't have those then, of course, but later in the war we had them. And of course then you could confirm how he did it, but there were lots of claims made that genuine. They thought they'd shot them down, but they hadn't. It was somebody else that had done it, or at least partially done it.
How did the squadron take the losses?
All right. I mean, there was nothing you could do about it. It's a tremendous feeling of comradeship, I suppose. But, you know, it didn't affect morale at all, really. We just got some new aeroplanes flown in and some new pilots flown in, and that was it. There was never any feeling of defeatism, I wouldn't say. Certainly not in 504. We had a very good morale.
What was this incident you mentioned where Holmes shot down a plane over Buckingham Palace?
Well, that was on the 15th of September, and he, as I say, shot this Dornier down, the Dornier 217, I think, and it actually crashed in the grounds of Buckingham Palace, and he himself was shot down, bailed out, and his parachute wrapped round a chimney, and he fell off the roof into a dustbin. Fortunately, the lid was off.
Did you ever think that the Germans could win the Battle of Britain?
No. I never heard anyone. I mean, all the time that we were getting the aeroplanes through and the pilots are coming through, I don't think there was any doubt in our minds that we should win it, because it makes a tremendous difference, of course, fighting over your own ground. I mean, one is much more confident then, even though the odds were against us, than one was later on. I had a Mustang squadron. We went with the Americans to Berlin. You can imagine, that's a long way in a single-seater fighter. It was 5.5 hours sitting at 30-odd thousand feet, which was, you know, and everything pretty hostile underneath you, had been bombed to pieces. So the morale was higher, I think, in the Battle of Britain than it was later in when you were fighting over somebody else's territory.
What was your attitude towards the enemy?
All right, we didn't bear them any grudge, as it were, really, because it's so different. I mean, I don't think I could ever have stuck a bayonet in someone, but to go and have a fight at 20,000 feet with another chap, that's entirely different, because you're shooting the aeroplane, not him. I honestly think if I'd had to go in the army, I don't know what I would have done, because I can't. I'm obviously, you must do it, but you know, it's much easier to put your sights on an aeroplane and shoot it. Shooting a man in cold blood, I don't think I could do that. I mean, obviously, if he was going to shoot me, I'd have to have a go at him, but it's you're shooting at the aeroplane, and you know, we didn't.
Was there any sense in which the dogfights in the Battle of Britain was gentlemanly warfare then?
Well, perhaps it may have happened in certain circumstances. I believe also that some Germans did actually fire at our people that had bailed out in parachutes. And of course, if that had happened, that would have... I think it did happen on several occasions. Some of these perhaps young Nazi types who were, you know, death or glory boys, they probably did that. I think accidents did... Or they were fired at, people coming down. Well, that, of course, would have upset people. There'd be no question of any mercy then, but I never saw that happen to anyone. I saw several people bail out, but nobody shot at them while I was about anyway.
Whilst you were at Hendon, how did you spend your spare time? Did you go into London?
we used to go every night to the Hendonware Hotel where I played the piano. That's mostly, very seldom went into London. It's a place I've never really liked. And we got to know several families that abused the pub, of course, and invited us back to their houses. But that was our main relaxation, a few pints and the piano.
Were fighter pilots then regarded as heroes by the public?
Oh, yes, yes. It was very difficult to buy a drink. As I said, when particularly playing the piano as well, I used to have more beer on the piano than one could drink.
Did alcohol affect your performance?
No. No, not... We didn't drink to the... to get drunk, as it were. It wasn't... not excessive drinking, really. And beer was so weak anyway. I mean, there was no drinking at the dispersal or anything like that, of course. I believe some places they did have a drink. I don't know. I'm not sure about that. I wouldn't like to say for certain, but there was certainly nobody flew when they'd been drinking.
Would anybody take drugs in those days?
I don't think so. No, the only thing is, the only thing one took in those days, if you did have a bit of a hangover, was sit in and put the oxygen full on, and that's like magic. It clears your head straight away. Just
that's
sit with the oxygen
mask.
Yes, absolutely. Just put the oxygen mask on, full blast, a couple of whiffs of that, and you're back to normal.
Were there any modifications which were made to the hurricanes?
Well, for the first part of September, the first, I suppose, four or five times I flew, my aeroplane didn't have armour plating behind it. It was only the later models. I had one of the first, the old ones, being fairly new to the squadron. And I actually flew at least four or five times without armour plating behind, which is pretty fatal, because most aeroplanes are hit from behind by people diving on them, fighters. And of course, without that protection, it would have been all over pretty quickly. But the only other modifications were... then, that was after the Battle of Britain, was a better VHF communications. I mean, the actual wireless sets in those early fighters were chronic. You could hardly hear what was being said. And then we got VHF, which was so clear, and made it much more easy to control what was going on.
How did the squadron feel about leaving Hendon for Filton?
A little bit disappointed, I think. But then again, it was still in the area of, there were still being attacks on Southampton, Bristol, so we weren't out of it. And then when we got after Filton, we went to Exeter. That was pretty boring. That was convoy patrols all day long. It's just go out to sea and see these little convoys sailing up and down and go round in circles on them. And from there, in January, I think it was, Trevor Parsons and another chap went off early one morning and shot this Heinkel down that was coming up the estuary. And the BBC said, two hurricanes from Exeter shot down the Heinkel. That night, about 20 Heinkel came over at 0 feet and bombed us. Flat in the airfield. Why there weren't many more killed, I don't know. I was in the station cinema, and we were all sort of panicked to get out because all the lights had gone out, and everybody kept falling down. There was a crush. I tripped over this thing, and everybody got, and that was an unexploded bomb. We're all tripping over an unexploded bomb, which had fell right outside the cinema door, and people couldn't see it. That was entirely due to the BBC saying two hurricanes from Exeter shot down this Heinkel, so they came and. We had to live out. They ruined all the dispersals. We were billeted out in private houses. And it was some time before, you know, at least 3 weeks before the airfield was. The airfield was made ready. We could use it, but we had to travel to the airfield every day. We didn't have any facilities, you know, feeding facilities, anything like that. It was all very. And then, of course, we half of us moved away and formed 81.
Where was the airfield in Exeter?
No, it's just on off the estuary, I think, if I remember rightly. It's still going today, of course. It's still a civil airport.
Just going back to Filton, can you describe how you shot the other 109 down?
The 110. Well, we, as I say, we were waiting for them. They came back, you see, not expecting us. They didn't. They must have thought, you know, who are these people? Sort of, where have they come from? And they came in below us. I just, every man for himself again, picked one off, flew up behind it, and shot it in the sort of wing route. And it went down with flames coming out of it. And then by then we were turning again. And then I smelt this terrible burning as I'd been hit again. So they had 110s and Jaguars. The Jaguar was the 110 fighter. The 110 was a day bomber, and the Jaguar was a 110 bomber converted with cannons and things. And that's what they had. I think there was about 40 in all, a mixture of 110s and Jaguars, but they all looked the same. No, they're very little difference in them to outwardly. So when you got close, you could see the cannons, of course.
And this was an attack on the Bristol aircraft.
Yes, on the they'd had bombed it on the 25th. We moved on the 26th, and they came again on the 27th. I think we shot five down that day. I'm not sure. I can't really remember now. I know it was a good day, because we were the only squadron there. There was nobody else there. They were making Bristol Beaufighters there then. They were actually producing them.
Had you thought that they would come back to attack the factory?
No, we hadn't. But they must have been there. It was clever thinking on somebody's part to put us there. They didn't come back again after that. That was the only raid that took place. And after that, they didn't come back again.
Were you getting replacements for pilots in 504 Squadron in the Battle of Britain who were very green? Were the replacements very inexperienced?
Well, they'd been to OTU. They'd fired guns and things, because by then, see, I didn't go to OTU because of the fall of France. The pilots who were ready then, they thought the squadrons would lick them into shape quicker than the OTUs. But the people coming with us, into us, and some of them were posted from other squadrons like ours at Wick. They weren't actually coming direct from flying training. They might find that somebody, say, in Yorkshire, Catterick perhaps, who was a fire squadron there, I think, they probably think, oh, we'll pinch a couple of pilots from them, post them down to 504. That's where a lot of that was done, not actually direct from, although some did come direct from training command. Some others were also taken out of squadrons that were in a quiet area.
But they had some kind of experience.
They had some kind, yes, they had some kind of combat. Or at least had a few hours on hurricanes.
So it sounds from what you're saying that there doesn't seem to have been a feeling of desperation in the Battle of Britain?
Well, I don't think so. Certainly didn't seem to be. Nobody seemed to worry. We used to think, well, again, as I said, you always think it can't happen to you, and if somebody was shot down, well, poor old Joe, whatever his name is, he's gone today, but we never really thought that we would defeated. I'm sure we didn't.
It was quite a long period. You were at Exeter comparatively from November 1940 yes. to June 41.
Yes, that's right.
Were there any other incidents there apart
No, just boring convoy patrols. Oh, we did a yes, we did a couple of sweeps. We moved up to Lim, I think it was, and did a sweep with the Blenheims over to Le Havre. Didn't see anything that day, just a lot of flak. And then we went to Bolt Head, and when the Lancasters attacked Brest, that was an awful. We went all the way across it, nothing but sea for miles, right to the end of our endurance. And we went to this Bolt Head, I think it was called. It was a funny. We took off from there, and it was a sheer drop into the sea. It was the most frightening business, I thought. Well, that was hairy, I thought. It was a rough old grass airfield. I think they only used it about twice. But that was so we could go as far as we could with the Lancasters and Halifaxes. They were bombing Brest in daylight, and that was they must have lost a lot on that. Never. Should never have done it. I mean, they weren't built for day bombing those things. They were night. The Halifax was slow. And
did you go as far as Brest?
No, we couldn't go as far as Brest. No, we went as far as we could, and then just sort of try and stop anything chasing them back to England. That's all we could do.
What month would that have been?
I think it was in April or May, I can't really remember the dates.
Can you tell me about leaving 504 Squadron now in June 41, please?
Yes, we went to Leconfield. Half the squadron, A flight, and the CO were sent to Leconfield to form 81 Squadron. We left the aeroplanes there. We're just talking about people on paper. People were posted on paper, half the squadron, including the ground crews and the fitters, riggers. And then other pilots were posted into us from various training establishments. And with no aeroplanes, we were just 81 Squadron on the ground, pilots and ground crew. And then we were sent on leave to York, in my case. Tearful farewells. We were told we were going overseas. And it wasn't till we found out, you know, we weren't actually told that we were going to Russia. We all hoped it would because there was something going on there. We wanted to get have another go, you see. We were keen where the action was. So when we heard it was Russia, there was great. You say, well, then we didn't have any aeroplanes. We were half of them were sent out on an old merchant ship. We went out on the Argus, this carrier, and no one has ever seen an aircraft carrier, never mind flown off one. And it was a one-way ticket. You couldn't get back on it again. It was open the throttle and start praying, because the Argus was an old Italian merchant ship captured in the First World War with some wooden planks on it. That was the Argus. And you could only get six aircraft up at a time. And they said, there's no way you can get back on again. And they said, you're so far north that the compasses won't work. So we'd been at sea for 3 weeks. We hadn't seen land or anything for 3 weeks. And I saw that it had a ramp at the end, which the Grumman martlets, of which there were two for sea defence of the carrier, were stressed to hit that and be thrown in the air. Well, of course, the hurricanes weren't. And the first hurricane to go off, the CO of the other squadron hit this ramp and almighty collapse. And he's in wheels, not his wheels back. So the first RAF aircraft to land in Russia landed wheels up. It's a typical airport arrival. Don't know what the old Ruskies must have thought about that. Anyway, I got the 4 minute by then. I watched it, and what I did, I opened it up at the last minute, just sort of dragged it back, and I got off. They said, we'll put a destroyer out about a mile away, so when you get off, or if you get off, do a circuit, come over the carrier and head for this destroyer, regardless of what the compass, your compass says, and fly for about 20 minutes, and you see Russia where you turn right, and fly along the coast till you see an aerodrome. This is all, you know, 3 weeks we hadn't seen anything, land, anything. So that's what we did. And we flew along, and there was this vast aerodrome called Vayanga, which is a sort of built in there, just sort of little hills all round it. And it was just one big sandy strip, and they had these big rollers rolling it. Huge, like those gang mowers they have at cricket pitches and things, you know, for cutting the grass. Well, these were rollers, which were, I suppose, about 3 or 4 feet in diameter, pulled on this kind of gang thing, I mean, pulled by a big tractor. And even when it snowed, we were landing on 3 or 4 feet of snow eventually. They just roll the snow flat all the time. And you had no control over the aeroplane. You put it down, it just slid all over the place. You know, you hoped if there wasn't too much of a crosswind, you'd keep it in a straight line, but it was pretty dodgy.
Where did you sail from?
We sailed from... we embarked at Greenock, I think it was. Glasgow, is that Greenock?
Yes.
That's Greenock, yes.
This was in September.
End of August, September, yes. I think we arrived there.
What route did you take?
Well, we just went up to Iceland around that way, and we picked up a cruiser. We had a cruiser with us and a couple of destroyers. And the Argus. And actually, if we hadn't got off that day that we got off, it was going to be abandoned because the weather was so bad. Some days, fog and low cloud, you couldn't see. The ship in front was trailing something, and they had a chap in the front, you know, following it, looking down to see. You couldn't see the ships at all. It was so thick with fog. And if we hadn't got off that day, we were going to have to come back because of the fuel situation, but fortunately it just cleared a little bit, 7 o'clock in the morning, and we got off, and then the Argus turned around and came home.
How far away from Vayanga were you when you took off from the Argus?
About 20 minutes flying time, which is what American cruising, say 180, about 60 miles.
Where is Vayanga?
Vayanga's just north of Murmansk, on the Kola Inlet. I believe it is now their experimental station, rather like their Cape Canaveral. You know, it's got all the, but it's right out in the sticks. There's nothing there at all. We only went into Murmansk once, and the whole time we were there 3 months. There was nothing to do.
Had the enemy challenged you on that voyage?
No, we didn't see anything. No.
So you were ashore for 3 months?
We're in Russia for 3 months. We operated for 6 weeks. Then we handed everything over to the Russians, including our flying helmets even. Everything. Just kept our personal thing, our toothbrushes and that sort of thing. Towels. And then we just hung about skiing and tobogganing until they send a cruiser to pick